Caromcast.com.
And welcome to the Caromcast episode 9. I'm going to be continuing the series that I began last week with cinematographer Steve Gaynor talking about the upcoming Marvel Comics action picture Punisher Warzone. And this week, I'm very excited to have the actual director of the film, Lexi Alexander, with me. A very exciting choice, a choice that people have considered from many different angles. And I can tell you, as an actor in the film, that I had an extraordinary experience with Lexi. Lexi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karim. You should be my agent.
Well, I'm so excited to have you here. My experience was an interesting one. I was up in Toronto, right, where I spent some of my summers, and my agent said to me right before I came back to Los Angeles that there was this new action movie coming out, and they wanted me to go in to read for the role of an Italian mobster. And I thought, are you kidding me? Have you seen me lately? Do I look like an Italian mobster to you? And it meant I would have to drive all the way across town to the very far opposite end of the city through rush hour traffic. And I thought, I don't know if this is going to be worth it. And what I've learned from my experience in Los Angeles, that an actor can never say no to an opportunity. You have to go, and you never know what will come of it.
Isn't that interesting? I didn't even know that you were considering not going. I didn't know that, but that's amazing, because I had kind of the same experience with my interview on the job, Punisher.
I walked into the room, and there was the scene in front of me, and I read it, and my idea with this character was he's really squeamish and so on. So I thought of Tim Roth in Peter Greenaway's movie The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover, when he's sitting at the table and they're shoving food in his mouth and he looks like he's just always about to throw up at all of this opulence. And that's how I played it.
Right.
I forgot about it. And then I went back to Los Angeles and my agent calls me and said, guess what? They want to make an offer for The Punisher.
My side of it is I hate not seeing actors in the room. I mean, I think it's unfair to the actor, it's unfair to the director, but sometimes it just cannot be avoided. It's just a matter of schedule and flying people in and, you know, wanting people from Toronto rather than only Montreal. And so it's always hard for me to look at these tapes, because sometimes I just feel like the tape is stealing the essence of the actor, especially in an audition setting when the light is wrong and, you know, people are nervous and stuff. But then here you came, and the first thing I was like, oh my God, he's got the most amazing face. And then you gave a good audition, and then it was just, it was one of the easy ones actually with you, I have to say. It was like, he's it, done.
That's a testament to what you did with this film, because I myself said to my agent, are you sure that it's me that they're talking about? This seems like such an unlikely choice. You know, I didn't know a thing about how the project was going to be done. As you mentioned, I didn't get to meet you in the room. No idea what the style was. I didn't know if this was going to be really straight, tongue-in-cheek. Marvel comic movies are done in different ways. And then when I started to see what the casting was like, I thought, there's something going on here that's unusual that I haven't seen before, and that actually proved to be true the further and further I went into production. So I want to turn this to you, and you mentioned already that you were unsure when they came to you about this, why they were looking at you for the project. Why do you think that they thought you would be the one to go with this?
Well, you know, to be honest, I think they looked at a few other directors before they came to me. But I knew that the executive was a fan of mine, and he was a fan of Hooligans, and I guess Hooligans had a lot of fights in there, so just kind of one thing led to another. But when I got the script, it was still called Punisher 2, and, you know, it had so much history and baggage with it. It wasn't something where, when my agent called me, I was like, oh, yes, I always wanted to direct Punisher 2, you know? Mm. But I read the script, and a comic book film is a great thing to do. And I think it's the future, and it's the present, and you can see that people are really asking for it. So I thought, okay, well, here's a script that doesn't make me fall in love with it, but I can elevate it. And that was the issue that I had when I first talked to the actors, like Ray Stevenson's. Actually, Ray's agent immediately went, no, absolutely not. And I consistently had to tell people, this script is not what we're doing. We're going to elevate this to a different kind of thing. We're going to make it new. And I had to also have Lionsgate ensure me that that's what we were doing.
Mm-hmm. And did that was that consistent throughout the end, through the completion of the film? Do you feel now at the end that the original intention that you had has been able to be carried through?
Well, you know, most of it, yes. I would say to 80-90%, I kind of put my head through, if you can say that. But,
sure.
You know, sometimes the studio is still the studio, you know. Like in terms of music and bringing bands on, I totally understand. There's a certain marketing to it, you know. There's a certain recognition of the band. I, you know, I'm proud of it. It's definitely something I sign off on, and it's something that I, you know, it is definitely my vision.
We have to understand that it's very seldom that any film that's going to get a wide theatrical release is ever going to be completely the director's solitary vision, because there are so many other considerations. Films are tested. There's the market that's always changing. There's stylization, and the studio themselves are taking educated guesses on what will be the best way to get not just the diehards, the built-in audience, but the new audiences to come in as well. And so those are very challenging considerations.
It is. And you know, at the one side, I also have to remind myself sometimes that I got lucky casting the people I wanted to cast. And you know, look, not every studio signs off on a movie with really no movie star in it. The entire cast, all of you guys had critical acclaim, but there was no one person that has points in Germany or England, like they say.
Yeah, the foreign markets, yeah.
Right, and that was a leap of faith. And so there was a lot of things that I thought they were really good about. Of course, as a director, I was very, very hard on everybody in terms of the movie we wanted to make and, for example, hiring Steve. And the things I wanted to do with this, because also I had made a promise. There's certain actors who turned this down at first, and I got on the phone and put my word on the line, and I gave them my word that this would be something different. And I didn't want to break that, and so I was pretty determined that what I wanted to do would really be on the screen.
I don't really want to talk much to the previous Punisher, but you can look at the fact that even though they had John Travolta, I don't necessarily think that movie did much for John Travolta's career. In fact, I would venture to say it may have taken a little bit away from it.
Right.
Even if somebody loves what Thomas Jane did, and even if somebody likes the way that they placed the story in Tampa and so on, what I'm saying is that just because John Travolta was in it did not necessarily benefit him or the film overall.
Exactly.
So sometimes it is about getting the right actors. And I remember the first time I saw your blog that had the photographs of the actors alongside the panels from the comics, I was just amazed by the similarities that you'd managed to find and what astute casting choices had been made. I thought, this looks like these people were drawn after the fact.
That, as well as they're all solid actors. And it's the same thing as when I was looking at these tapes, you know. People would come in, and there's a difference between acting and acting. You know this.
Yeah.
People like Ray and Dominic and you and Dutch Hutchison and Dash Myhawk, who I think are proper actors, you know. And then there are people who are good-looking. And there is a difference to me. And I think when you take a project on like this, that is already, I think, challenged with the past it comes with. And, you know, I was just talking with a Punisher fan about this last week, is the Punisher, unfortunately, has a little bit of a bad reputation in the comic book world. I often see these journalists writing these articles about it being a B comic character. I don't know how they get this, because if you actually sit down and read those books, they are much more intelligent and better written than some of the considered A characters.
Sure.
But that's what comes with it. So I wanted to be sure that we do have a cast that can act, especially since, as you know, I had no time. I had maybe two takes at the most.
The thing about the not being A-list actors, that just may be because you're ahead of the game here, because these actors will become A-list actors. Dominic West and his performance on The Wire, which in itself is a show that is considered to be at the absolute pinnacle of the art form right now and is viewed by some of the smartest minds around, is considered a masterpiece, and he's the one that's really driving the biggest part of the complexity of that show with his character McNulty.
Right.
To assume that he can somehow not pull off this character is to be naive.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, maybe I'm not objective here, but I just loved what he did with Jigsaw. I could watch his pieces over and over and over again. He brought so much to it. And you know what? Let me tell you something. He would probably kill me for revealing this. But I once went into his trailer to talk about a scene that he had to do with the second unit director, because once again, we were in a time crunch, and I basically had to rehearse it with him, but then leave it up to Doug, our second unit director. And I walked in his trailer, and here he was, the notes written all over the script, and I like sneaked a look, and it was all these examples of who he's comparing himself to. A certain thing he said, Adolf Hitler, propaganda, and I got it. He's a proper London theater actor.
Yeah, and this can be carried across to anybody from Doug Hutchinson, Colin Salmon, Mark right. Camacho, Ray Stevenson. It's an extraordinary group of people. And again, any question that people may have about not casting bigger names is going to be changed very quickly once these people do step into their rightful positions in the strata.
Well, I think the fans don't question it. See, that's a great thing. I think generally people, especially in the U.S., want to see the best actor for it. They don't sometimes understand why a certain name actor has been cast, and we in Hollywood behind the camera understand why. Mm-hmm. Because people have certain points in the foreign market. Like, I have these lists where there's actors' names, and next to it is he's an A in France, and he's a B in Germany, and he's a C in England, and he's an A in U.S., and that's sometimes how these decisions get made, by people who work for the studio, who are corporate people. And this is sometimes where commerce and art clashes. In this case, we were really lucky. I mean, this studio signed off on the best actors, which I thought was amazing.
Let's talk a little bit about what your challenges were in creating an action movie that will deliver and has to balance that with drama and story, especially in a franchise that's basically been covered now for the third time, has such a long, long history. What were the challenges that this presented for you in determining how much action am I going to have to put up on screen versus the drama, and how do I get the balance right?
First of all, for every movie I make, I have a scale. Every page is considered 1 minute. So I break down the script and I make a scale based on when action is coming in. Now, if I see that there's 20, 30 pages with nothing happening, I have a problem. That's even I, as an audience member, would think about my laundry that I still have to pick up from the dry cleaner.
Right.
That cannot happen. And so you have to bring and I'm not necessarily meaning action in somebody needs to get shot, somebody needs to jump from a building. I'm talking about tension.
Plot twists.
Exactly. People should be on the edge of their seat. But if 20 minutes go by where they're not, where it's just exposition, it's going to fail. So there's actually a very easy logic to kind of figure out what you have to do to get people interested. Sometimes I like the quieter moments more, and that sometimes not everybody agrees with. But in this movie, we have actually managed to bring a lot of Frank Castle's internal trauma into it. We haven't seen it in the trailers, unfortunately, but as you know, there is a lot of acting going on. There's a lot of dialogue. There's a lot of relationships. And even relationships not only between Castle and his friends or people that he wants to protect, but between antagonists.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there, for example, there's your relationship with your father in Kid City, and then Jigsaw and LBJ have an amazingly bizarre relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So we did have time for it. I'm actually quite proud of what we achieved.
Yeah, I think the relationships were very complex and intertwined. Why would Ink and Pitsy hang out with Jigsaw as long as they do? Ink was raised completely differently than Pitsy would have wished, because he's probably more like his mother, and Pitsy hates this. And that's carried across through all the characters, the Soap and the Punisher and Budansky, and all of them have
right.
this really rich network of things going on. And I think the more, let's say, mature viewer of the material will recognize that those subtleties and nuances are in play. The worst critics are the ones who have not explored this project far long enough and are posting, this is just going to be more headshot tripe that's a bunch of blood and everything, and it's meaningless violence.
It's always funny to me when I read these posts or these, even people who have websites who, you know, make a judgment on a film that they haven't even seen it. Oh, this is going to flop. Skip it. All this stuff. You've watched 2 minutes of trailer footage. You really are going to judge this movie by that? I don't even know who spends their time posting these kind of mean-spirited things on the internet, but what really makes me happy is when I read the fans' responses. I mean, they are just the best protectors anybody could have. Are you reading some of this stuff?
Oh, I've certainly had my chances to look at what some of the responses are. One of my favorite boards is obviously IMDb, because I can cross-reference any comment or actor or movie back and forth. And that's got quite an active community. And there's a real polarity there between the last Punisher and the new Punisher. But I would have to say that for the most part, it's a quite well-behaved board. You know, these are not people that are brainless. These are people who are eloquent in a lot of ways. And
right, and they really understand the Punisher. That's what's so interesting is. And they don't want people who don't understand the Punisher to judge it. And they're very protective about it. And I just said this the other day, I think Punisher fans have something. I guess if you like Frank Castle, you have to represent those character traits he has, which is standing up for what he thinks is right. And I'm just, there's so much joy when I read these people coming back at the people who post mean-spirited things, that is, I would say it's one of the best parts about having made this movie is the fans of the Punisher.
I was going to put the question to you about why you think that Frank Castle has persisted as such an interesting character, but I just want to put my own conjecture in front of it, if I may. I've got a script I've been developing for a while, which is a mystery, and the protagonist is a detective. And over the course of developing the screenplay, I've seen that every level of complexity has to do with the detective, and it can't even be Batman, having to make a choice between when do you stay within the bounds of the law to bring justice and when do you have to forgo the law to bring justice. And at the end of it all, even if you bring the criminals to justice, if you did it with, let's say, grayer means, did you succeed or did you fail? If you have to cross the line, are you any better than the people that you're bringing to justice? And I think the intrigue about Frank is that he said the bureaucracy and the administration is just never going to be able to do this. And there's certain
right.
things that simply will always fall outside of having to wait for the paperwork to be filed. Do you agree with that about Frank?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's actually the character Colin Salmon plays, Paul Budiansky, by the way, Colin Salmon, also brilliant actor, who constantly batters Castle about the letter of the law. And there is a big question about that, you know? I mean, certainly justice is incredibly important, and following the law. Otherwise, we would have an insane-going society. But what I personally admire about Castle and the mythology of Frank Castle is that his family was shut in front of his eyes. And that's what turned him into the Punisher. And I think there is part in all of us that thinks once in a while, if something like this would happen to me, I wish I would have the balls to go out and do what Frank Castle does. I think that's just in you. I mean, personally, I feel it when I see a primetime or 2020 episode on some kind of child molester or some little 8-year-old getting killed. It makes me want to put a fucking skull on. Sorry, am I allowed to curse?
You can say whatever the hell you want to say.
Well, it makes me want to put on a skull and go out and shoot people. That is really the truth. And I think that's what we look up to him and we understand. I think we also feel for his pain.
The immense challenge that we face in society is, like you said, we may have those thoughts, but there's a difference between following them through and not. And we can't all just go out and start taking out our vendettas on everybody. This is the basis of civilization, is that we don't do that. And I think that's why Punisher, in a way, is a sort of a catharsis for our imagination to allow us to kind of get a relief from that. The Punisher is a complicated hero because you never really know whether to see the Punisher as a hero or a villain. I mean, he has been both. He was originally the assassin hired to kill Spider-Man.
Exactly.
And he flip-flops back and forth, and I think it puts the audience in this position of, you know, the way I look at this is what Frank represents to me. It's not as simple as Superman coming down to save the day no matter what the cause. There's much more moral ambiguity in it, and that's why it's a fascinating character that's lasted for
exactly.
so long.
Exactly. I think it's three-dimensional, it's more complex, and there's a real, it's not black or white, there's a real gray zone. You know, when I first got this gig and Marvel had sent me boxes and boxes of comic books and I started getting into him, there were things about him I didn't like. There were choices he made I didn't like. And then there were choices he made, like I think I talked about this before in an interview, when some guy comes, a neighbor comes over to his house. This is just right after he's lost his family, and the neighbor admits to having an affair with his secretary. And Castle literally throws him out of the window, saying, I just lost my wife, and you telling me you fuck around on your wife?
Right.
And I thought, well, that's great. That's a movie right there, you know? That's a great guy. That's a hero. So it is ambiguous. It's not clear. We can't make a clear judgment about him. And I think that is what makes a more interesting character, really.
Sometimes he reminds me of that scene in Indiana Jones where we've already seen that Indiana can do this whole crazy trick with his whip, and he whips it around and does all these flashy moves. And then finally, we come back to the same setup, and he just whips out his gun and deals with the guy, you know, swinging his sabers around, and Indiana just whips out his gun and shoots him. And there's something about that in Frank Castle, too.
Well, that is true. I never actually thought about that, but you are correct.
So let's talk about the actual experience for you of how you executed the film on set. For example, I want to talk about interesting things that you couldn't have predicted, like that photograph that you looked at when there's a skull in the background that's just a part of the architecture.
That's unbelievable, isn't it? Like, to this day, I can't explain this. I thought Steve and Eames, our key gaffer, were playing a trick on me. I thought they had prepared this for weeks and they're just playing dumb. But, you know, if you look in Steve's eyes and he's telling you the truth, you know he's telling you the truth. So it really was a coincidence. There was a damn skull, a huge skull in the background of our scene on the street that we didn't know was there.
Well, and that's part of the conversation I was having with Steve, is that both he and you have this experience working in the strictly independent film world. And one of the things about independent filmmakers that I always find so exciting is that they are people who know how to also look at an existing opportunity on the day of shooting and maximize that.
I agree.
You use things that can come up as a surprise to your benefit, as opposed to, oh man, now we have to reschedule for 2 days.
I'm not sure if you remember this, but there was actually something missing. I don't know how it happened, but I all of a sudden felt when you, Chixa, and Pitsy arrived in the Range Rover from the mansion and going into the glass recycling factory, I thought there was something missing. We couldn't just stop on the Range Rover. And I said, Steve, we have to see these guys walk in there. It's stupid if we don't.
Yeah.
As you know, all of our shots were really artistic and prepared in light, and they were talked about, and the color scheme was on the call sheet. Everything was set up. And so even though we wanted to be flexible and spontaneous, we had also prepped in a way that there wasn't a lot of space to be that flexible. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, is there any way we can get a cool shot out of these guys getting out of the car and walking into the glass factory? Do you remember this?
Of course.
He created a shot within 30 seconds, I think, in his head, that turned out to be one of my favorite shots in the movie.
I also remember that when we started shooting that night, the ground was as dry as could be. And halfway through that day or that night, it started to blizzard. And that was the first real major snowfall. And then we thought, oh my God, what are we going to do for the next 3 days? There's all of a sudden, you know, 3 feet of snow on the ground.
One night I had a friend from LA, and actually a producer who worked on Hooligans. She was in Montreal to meet people about a video game. And she visited me that moment on the set. And she looked at the snowstorm and she turned to me and she said, you're not going to finish this movie, are you? And I said, yes, I am. What do you think we're going to do? There's no magic stage we can move to.
That was extraordinary.
It was a funny moment because all the people in Montreal told us, it hasn't snowed here in 20 years in November and December. It's not going to snow, you know. And then we were in the biggest snowstorm there was.
In like half a century.
Right, exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about your relationship with Pat Johnson, who I got to meet, and he choreographed a couple of quick scenes for me, but I got the sense when I met Pat Johnson that this guy is just a legend and an icon in the stunt choreography world. Let's fill people in a little bit about Pat Johnson and your relationship with him.
Well, I would say legend is exactly the right word. And sometimes I feel when it comes from me, people think I exaggerate because I come from the martial arts world, and I definitely, he is one of my senseis that I look up to. I'm glad you say it. Most of the actors who meet him say it. I mean, he's got great stories. He used to be Steve McQueen's best friend and often tells us stories about their friendship and their adventures together. So he is a legendary person just in himself. He was also the captain of the Chuck Norris team, karate team, that competed on the circuit for years. I think he's won something like 350 fights, you know, because when they did tournaments at that time, you would have about 10, 15 fights a weekend to win the trophy. And so he truly, truly is. He's a legend. And I met him, I think when I was like 19, 20, I had just moved to the U.S. And he gave me my first job, which was I was Princess Katana in Mortal Kombat. Mm-hmm. And then later on, he hired me as a stuntwoman, I think, on Batman and Robin. Was that it? Yeah. And so the Joel Schumacher picture, and so on. Like, we've had a relationship for a long time. And then when I became a director, obviously, I was calling him. So he's my friend and my stunt choreographer, but he's also somewhat of a father figure to me, who's always giving more because he's trying extra hard for me. But he also always gets along with actors, and I think he does more than just teach them how to fight. There's a certain essence of a fighter that he puts in people, which I think is really important.
And he does it quickly, too. Just so people understand, when you meet Pat Johnson, you're not meeting someone who looks like The Rock.
Right.
He looks like a quiet little old guy, and he's got his little spectacles, and he's very, very sweet, the kind of guy that would invite you over to have a cup of tea.
Which he always does. He always invites everybody over for Thanksgiving dinner. And he hugs everybody.
Couldn't be a nicer gentleman, but this guy could snap anybody's neck in a second.
Right.
And that was the thing, is I thought, well, I didn't get 3 months of training like Ray did. How am I going to look like a menace on screen? I'm not a big guy like Ray. But what Pat did was he said, listen, this is how this kind of a fighter would work. This is how a psychopath would work. This is how a small guy would disarm a big guy, and so on. And here's the way that they would see the room and the opportunity and whatever. And I thought, oh, okay, now I understand from the inside out what makes me dangerous in this situation. That was the difference.
Right. So he's a genius about that stuff, really. I mean, I hope he never retires. Actually, I fight choreographed, so I can choreograph my own fights if there's really, if we really can't afford anybody. So that is not what you get out of Pat Johnson the most. What he brings with him is this knowledge about fighters, what's in the heart of a fighter. He's helped Ray so much to get into this character. He knows so much about that whole field. He's a real blessing to have on a movie.
The caliber of a film can go all the way down on the chain and all the way up the chain. Everything from the art designers to the stunt choreographers can be legends. The brilliance of their work can be hidden behind the flashier credits.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, if it would be up to me, all of those people would be getting credit way before the director and the actors, really. The truth is they spend a lot longer on these movies than anybody else.
Indeed.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really unbelievable. And sometimes, yeah, they are really kind of like the unsung heroes.
How do you feel that The Punisher fits into the current zeitgeist? How do you think this film will play with people who are coming off of Dark Knight and Iron Man?
I think it's interesting to see who's going to go see that. I think it's a great weekend we're opening, you know, because there's really nothing like The Punisher. There's no, immediate competition that weekend opening. Talking about Pat Johnson, the both of us are obviously really well known in the martial arts industry. And the martial arts industry is really, really big in the United States. Mm. I mean, I think there's, 5,000 karate schools in every town. Mm. And so we have sent out flyers and emails and all kinds of stuff to say, this is a true by martial artists, by your kind of people's movie. Support it, go the opening weekend. And all these karate school owners emailed us back. I said, no problems. Me and my students will be there opening weekend. So I think that's really unique because I keep thinking of The Passion of Christ and all the churches who went buzzing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't underestimate what seems to be a, let's call it, I dare say, a niche market can have an
right.
enormous power to swing the impact of something when it comes out. It could be soccer moms or it could be dojos.
Exactly. I'm hoping for the best for a lot of people. I mean, obviously, it's been already said that I hired a lot of first-timers, including myself. I'm a first-time studio director. You know, I thought I would be in the independent world for a much longer time. But for people like Steve, like Ray, like Dominic, Doug Hutchison, all of you guys, and a lot of the people I really talked, A, into taking this project, and B, into doing more than they usually do. Like, you know, there's something to be said about a crip or an art director or all these guys working on 4 movies a year, and they're always doing overtime and not seeing their family, not seeing their kids. How do you motivate somebody like that to go the extra mile for us? And I think we've managed to do that on this project. We've managed to actually sell to our cast and crew that this is going to be something special. So for that alone, I hope that it will really turn out something special and not just go away after a week.
I've been acting for 27 years. I've done a lot of
You're
projects.
You're not even 27 years old, are you?
Well, let's keep that myth going. I've seen all sorts of projects on all sorts of levels, and sometimes, in a very, very rare occasion, you get on a project where no matter how arduous the process, no matter how difficult or challenging, the thing just feels like all the people want to be there and it comes together. And that's why this is my second podcast about this project, because this was a project where everybody felt like they were in the right place. Everybody wanted to do this together. Everybody did go the extra mile because they chose to. And there was never a hiccup. I never felt tension that was between people on the set.
Never. We never had tension on set.
That was a really very, very rare thing to feel on a film, which is weird for a film that's really so violent and so dark. Really felt like family very quickly on this.
I agree, and people who really don't even recognize what's going on set came and said, wow, this looks really amazing. And that's exactly what I wanted from the get-go. I also knew that Steve would deliver exactly that. I wanted that kind of feeling because, honestly, if everybody just comes like, eh, I'm on Punisher 2, you know, like if it's that kind of film, what really can you achieve? So we needed to give it a title. We needed to make it something new, and we needed to let people know that this is something special. And that's why I created all that same wardrobe color and all of that, because I wanted to give it its specific touch, which was basically we are going to be as close as a Max comic book as possible. There's a lot of stuff coming out lately about me fighting for people or me fighting. And I think that was the reason, is sometimes when you want something so unique, is you have to put your foot down and people try to pull you to the left and pull you to the right. I think it was a Wim Wenders, a German director, who once said, being a director is like running with a burning torch, which represents your vision. And as you're running the course, people are throwing water at it and all kinds of things, and you have to keep it burning and come at the end, get into the goal with the torch still burning. And that's exactly how this film felt to me. I kept thinking, I really, really have to defend this because, you know, I can't let people down.
I would much rather be able to work with a director who can persist with the vision long enough to take it to that place that's unusual than to one that comes in fighting and then starts to give up their position, because that lack of confidence will actually create an ultimate project that's confused and will just seem not quite as mainstream, but just sort of weird. So it's not that it makes you antagonistic and a fighter and just because you're hard-headed. It means that you know that you're taking us into somewhat uncharted territory. And I'll give an example, just so people don't think I'm speaking in general terms. When I got when I went to do my first wardrobe fitting, and this is after I'd had my head wrapped in plaster for an hour.
You have to explain that, I think.
Well, I mean, I got to Montreal and they said, by the way, you're not claustrophobic, are you? And I said, well, I don't know. Depends. They said, well, we need to wrap your head in plaster of Paris. I said, part of my head? They said, no, we need to cover your entire head down to your shoulders. And it's going to harden after about 15 minutes. So you know how to meditate, right? And the thing about it was that my mouth had to be slightly open.
Correct.
So this stuff went into my mouth, into the sides of my cheeks, you know, everything. I didn't even have nose holes. I had this tiny little slit to breathe through. And as I felt this thing hardening, I thought, the scariest thing is, if I panic right now, I'll just have to do it over again.
Right.
So that was the beginning of my experience on Punisher. And then I went into the wardrobe warehouse, and they were talking about how everything in the movie, for the first half is gray, and then the second half, it's all black. There was this thing about complete black, not hues, whatever, and I thought, how are you going to shoot a movie at night completely, and all I'm wearing is jet black? How is this even going to be possible? And then I started to understand that the lighting was going to be unusual. It was going to be very saturated. Mm-hmm. And some people say, oh, it looks too cartoony or 80s. Trust me, folks, it's not nearly even as extreme as the comic in its absoluteness. You want it to work in these solid primary colors, and the clothes had to be like an ink, like, not my character, but it had to be like someone who's inking a comic against those colors.
Exactly. And you know what? Let's praise Odette here for a second, our costume designer. I mean, I threw that on her in the last minute. Like, we kept, Steve and the production designer, Andrew, and I kept making up these images of how this film's going to look, and we kept looking at the comic book, and I kept saying, there's something wrong. There's something we're not getting yet. And it was really, I mean, Odette had almost bought all the wardrobe already. And all of a sudden, as I look in the comic book, I said, I get it. Look at the wardrobe. They all have the same kind of color wardrobe on. That's so it doesn't take away from the three color scheme. Mm-hmm. If you put somebody in a red tie and the other one in a yellow shirt, I mean, that makes it a whole circus again.
Yeah, and then it starts to look like Dick Tracy.
Exactly. And so I pulled her into the office. It was so funny. I pulled her into the office and I said to Andrew, the production designer, and Steve, listen, guys, I'm going to throw this on her and she's probably going to have a heart attack because she bought already half of the wardrobe. So you guys have to support me. And Odette came in and she looked at me all like she's about to get fired or something.
Right.
And I said, here's the thing. Everything has to be the same color in every shot. And Odette was like, yeah, okay, I think that's a great idea.
What do you want to tell me about this that people out on the internet simply have not had access to, about the film, about your process, about how you thought about this, so we can set some records straight?
I think that the one thing I would really like, not only the diehard Punisher fans, but also just in general comic book fans to know, is that we took it serious. None of us called it in. None of us got a big paycheck. And it was really a work of passion. Not everybody's going to like it. I mean, there's no one thing that everybody's going to like. But I think that people who are interested in this genre and read these kind of comic books will really respect that we went as close as it possibly gets to putting a Max comic book on the screen. I read these sites like Global Punisher Army, who have obviously been Punisher fans before I even read my first Punisher book. And I think they've all picked up on part of why they get so passionate about it and get so passionate about me and me being involved in every aspect of it, is because they picked up on the fact that we didn't just make our movie, we made their movie.
And I can tell you that I was a Punisher fan, and I'd always hoped that there would be a great film. And I haven't seen it yet, but I believe all the elements were there as best they could be. So if it works, then best efforts can actually make it. And if it doesn't work, it's because you just really can't make a Punisher movie. Well, I want to thank you so very much for taking the time out to talk to me.
No, thank you for doing this. I think people really love this, that that an actual actor of our team actually takes the time to do this. And I'm reading a lot that people really like that.
Well, I wish you well on December 5th. What are you going to be doing next? Can you talk to us about any future projects?
No, I haven't decided yet. I'm hoping that my scripts are getting better as the month goes, or as the next month goes. So we'll see. Movies for a director are way too long to do for the paycheck. So you have to have your heart in it. And nothing has come up yet that I said, oh, wow, I really want to do this.
It means that you put the integrity before the paycheck. And I really look forward to what comes from you next, Lexi.
Ah, thank you so much. And you know, I loved you working with me. I hope we can do it again. I think you're such a talented person in so many ways. So hopefully we have this opportunity again soon.
Oh, that would be terrific. And that's the Karamcast episode 9 with director Lexi Alexander, whose film Punisher Warzone comes out from Marvel Comics Lionsgate Films on December 5th in theaters nationwide. Thanks for listening to the Karamcast, and I'll see you soon.